The Complete Steal, written by Catherine Aird and read by Robin Bailey.
Chapter 1. Ornham House was open to the public, which didn't help the police one little bit. On the contrary, in fact. It was open every Wednesday, Saturday and Sunday from April to October, and to parties at other times by prior arrangement with the steward and comptroller. It was also open, as all guidebooks said, bank halls, Good Friday excepted. Henry Augustus Rudolfo Cremond Cremond, 13th Earl Ornham of Ornham in the county of Calshire, drew the line at opening Ornham House on Good Friday. Religious holiday, not a civil one. No bean feast in my house on Good Friday, he decreed, adding, as he always added when the subject came up, "Don't know what my father would have thought about having people in the house for money." There was usually someone on hand to make a sympathetic noise at this point. "Guests, family and servants," his lordship would go on plaintively. "That was all in his day. Now it's half Kelshire." This understandable repugnance at having his family home tramped over did not, however, prevent his taking a close interest in the daily tally of visitors. At the end of every open day, Charles Purvis, his steward, was summoned to give an account of the numbers. Much as in Scotland, on the days succeeding the glorious 12th of August, the gamekeeper presented himself each evening with the game bag totals. Ornham House, attractive as it undoubtedly was, did not really compete in the stately home league tables. It was too far off the beaten tourist track for that. Nevertheless, it did have a respectable number of visitors each year. It was sufficiently near to Bearbury to constitute a must for people coming to that town, and sufficiently far from the industrial complex of Luston to be an outing for people living there. The outing was usually extended to cover visits to the 13th-century Church of St. Aidan or the 20th-century roadhouse The Fiddler's Delight, but seldom both. On this particular Sunday in June, the little church by the big house offered its own attractions. It was both quiet and cold, and it was possible to sit down in a pew in peace and surreptitiously to slip off shoes grown too small on a hot afternoon. It had the edge, temporarily at least, on The Fiddler's Delight, which wouldn't open until 6 o'clock. Mrs. Pearl Fisher was a member of the public who had come to see over Ornham House, and her feet hurt. She hadn't even got as far as the house itself yet, and they hurt already. This was partly because they were cramped into her best pair of shoes, and partly because she'd spent too long standing on them. In the ordinary way, she spent her Sunday afternoons having a quiet nap, but this Sunday was different. Just how different it was going to be had not yet become apparent to Mrs. Fisher when she and the twins and the rest of their party spilled out of the coach just before lunchtime. The house and the grounds were both fuller than usual. It had been wet for 3 weekends in a row, and now, suddenly, it was flaming June with a vengeance. There had been picnickers all over the park since noon, disporting themselves among the trees in a manner not envisaged by Capability Brown when invited to lay out the great park in the then modern manner. That had been after one of the Earls of Ornham had clapped a Palladian front on the south side of the medieval house, and that had been after he had got back from his first grand tour. The public, though, seemed to have got the idea of Capability's pleasances. They were positively full of people taking conscious pleasure from walking in them, enjoying their alternating sun and shade and the smooth grass underfoot, and every now and then exclaiming at an unexpected vista carefully planned by that master craftsman for them to exclaim at. At least two people had entered into the spirit of the folly which was set on a little rise some way from the house. "No," said Miss Mavis Palmer. "Go on," urged her ardent young man. "No," said Mavis less firmly. "Be a sport." Mavis giggled. They'd come to Ornham House for the day with a coach party from Luston, and there was no question but that they were enjoying themselves. Mrs. Pearl Fisher, who had come on the same coach, wasn't quite so sure she was. Apart from her feet, which were troubling her more than a little, there were the twins, Michael and Maureen, whom she'd brought with her for the ample reason that Mr. Fisher would never have forgiven her for leaving them at home. His Sunday was sacrosanct to the King's Arms and his own armchair. Like Miss Mavis Palmer and her young man Bernard, she came from Paradise Row, Luston. Any student of industrial philanthropy would immediately recognise this as a particularly grimy part of that particularly grimy town. By some Victorian quirk of self-righteousness, the street names there varied in inverse proportion to their amenity.